books that are helpful to me in storytelling, oral histories. This is one called Inventing the Truth, which I really like that title, The Art and Craft of Memoir. And there are several well-known authors that have written little stories, essays and memoirs about this particular discipline. Russell Baker, Annie Dillard, Alfred Kazin, Toni Morrison, and Lewis Thomas. And then this is kind of a classic in its field, Brutal Bettelheim. The uses of enchantment, the meaning and importance of fairy tales. And he was a very renowned psychoanalyst who kind of pioneered this field, bringing the importance of fairy tales. You know, many people feel that fairy tales such as Grimm fairy tales are frightening to children, and he believes that they are kind of metaphors for and to help young people launch into life. This is another wonderful one, Robert Coles, who has written many books. He has written a series called Children in Crisis. He is a doctor. He teaches at Harvard, but he teaches literature to doctors. His mentor was William Carlos Williams, the poet, who was also a doctor, and he followed Dr. Williams through the various ghettos where Dr. Williams saw patients and so forth. And he really believes that storytelling and literature are life-enhancing forces, and especially for people. He talks about the arrogance of the expertise of being an authority in your field, of being a doctor, of being a lawyer, of being somebody who is constantly helping people, and the constant struggle he has with that type of arrogance, of setting himself
What's the name
above
of it?
People. This is called The Call of Stories.
Right.
I'll leave them out here. And one that I've been looking at a lot for this session is a really good one. It's called Awakening the Hidden Storyteller, How to Build a Storytelling Tradition in Your Family by Robin Moore. And they're kind of step-by-step exercises in bringing this into your family life. And he also has a tape. So I've drawn quite a bit from this. I think I'll close the door when this comes up. I just want to say that I think I've told a couple of people that I thought it was really kind of nervy of me to come up to Holden to teach storytelling when the very heart of Holden is storytelling. This is my first time here. And, you know, with all the pastors here who are wonderful storytellers, with all of the people here who have heard stories throughout their lives in church and in their families, I was thinking that I've had some thoughts about what that means. One of the things that I think you need is time. You know, and Holden is the kind of place where you can come up here and you have the time to relate to one another. And anytime you start relating to people, you're going to hear stories of them. I think that most people are kind of intimidated by the professional storyteller. They think you have to memorize a lot of things and have a lot of gift for gab and so forth. And I would never be in the work that I'm doing if those were the requirements, because I really am interested in the lives of ordinary people, and because therein I feel lies the extraordinary. So, as you know, I work with oral history a lot. And it's all of your stories that are part of my story, and that I'm always constantly learning so much from. And so as this week has gone by, I've changed my course outline a lot. That's why I'm always going up to Catherine at breakfast, you know, and giving her a new announcement of what I'm going to do. So I switch things around on Tuesday too. But that's because I'm learning so much from being at Holden and from being around you. You know, last night at Vespers, we heard a story about the struggle against the pain and fear and illness from two very young people. And a couple of mornings ago at breakfast time, there was a story about a father who willingly ate a breakfast of burnt toast and soggy cereal because that was a meal that was prepared lovingly by his children. And that story transcended into a story about God. On the hike to 10 Mile Falls, on the way back, Dean told us a story about being charged by a very angry and wounded elephant. And also on that hike, Esther and I exchanged thunder and lightning stories, mine from Chicago and hers from Kansas. And I had told her that when I was a little girl, on Monday nights, my mother would have to work and my Uncle Frank would babysit me and he'd have to give me a bath. And on this one particular Monday night, Uncle Frank was really engrossed in Lux Radio Theater. And I kept nagging at him to give me a bath, Uncle Frank, give me a bath, you know. And finally he turned to me and he said, you know, it's thundering and lightning. And if you take a bath during a storm, God will come and take away your belly button. And you know, to this day, I feel slightly uncomfortable every time I take a bath when it rains.
You look a little bit.
And then Esther said that her mother had always said that thunder was God rolling out the potatoes. And you know what lightning is? God lighting a match to cook the potatoes.
Yeah.
So that's the Kansas version of you know, the thunder and lightning story. Let's see. June Nielsen, who is a Lutheran pastor who was here giving a storytelling workshop a few years ago, I was listening to a tape in the library on her storytelling forum. She said that stories are our love gifts, part of our willingness to share with each other. So you own your own story, and when you translate it to me, I'm enlarged by it. Your story can change my story. It can heighten my own awareness and give me a sense of myself. It can also help to give me the courage to own some of the piece of my own journey. So let's stand up and let's construct a story together. And let's make a story about Hawaii. And let's close in as much as we can. Okay. We can, but we should, get really close so we can focus. Ideally, what we should do, I was saying we should build a fire here. I should have brought some marshmallows. Okay, we're going to construct a story about Holden, about a person who got lost while they were at Holden. And you can fill in the details. This person can be a man, woman, child. The person can be a maverick, a waitron, somebody on the staff, a teacher, a visitor, whatever. We're going to do this one word at a time, so it'll be once upon a time. That's how we'll start out.
The hard one.
So you guys are off the hook for this round. And you can end it whenever you want, but the one requirement in this is the plot is that this person gets lost. So try to do something with that in some way or another. And when it feels right, you can end it. But somebody has to say the, and then you can say end. So, but when it feels right, you know, when the story should end, right, you can say. So please try not to say once upon a time the end. And if you're just completely stuck, you can't think of a thing, just say bleep. And say it as loudly as you can. Bleep! And then the responsibility will be on the next person. And let's try not to have 10 bleeps in a row. I mean, Holly and I cannot bleep, so, you know, we've got that kind of responsibility. So maybe you should go over there.
Oh, I have to do once upon a time, D?
Right.
You really got part, I have to say D.
Okay, shall we go around this way? Once.
Upon.
Time.
There.
Was.
A. Little.
Boy.
who
came
to
Poland
village.
Oh, easy one with P.
Is there a time limit?
No, but you can say leave if you want.
Okay. Came
to
play
on the don't say and
on the end
trails
around
camp.
Gotcha.
And
I don't want to say he again, it puts a hard on you.
And
he meditated.
Wow, he was not
there. Oh, wow!
As
meditated as. Hey.
It's getting hot in here.
Are you
ready? Yeah.
He meditated as
a.
I didn't say as, don't blame me.
Child.
Yeah.
Oh.
In. I meditated as a child in. In a.
Strange.
Manner.
Wonderful.
Manner.
Wonderful.
I always get this weird connected word. Is that my true buzz?
I'm not curious.
You said while.
While?
Yes.
I keep saying he. While the. I'm tired of saying he.
Birds.
Pardon?
Birds.
Ooh.
Sword.
Overhead.
Chirping.
Not too far overhead, were they?
Flapping.
You say flapping?
No. Chirping flap. Near. Near.
Near his.
A tree.
Nope.
It is. There it is. Position.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I get to start on the new sentence. Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't I get to
start?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it could be any high you want to take
high.
It as. I will soon.
I will. I will. Above.
Rippling.
So very nice.
Very nice.
Okay, let's get on to the plot.
I've been trying to get out of the camp.
Okay, now we're at the stream.
Rippling stream.
So that's the end of the sentence.
Could be. Near.
Oh, something.
By a.
What was this? I didn't get
no.
That.
No, nearby a.
But what came before it?
A fury.
Oh,
I
have
not
heard
of it.
Nearby a.
Nearby a chipmunk.
Scurrying.
Hungrily.
Across.
The. Trail.
Mm-hmm.
Was.
Searching. For.
Ooh.
Can I give the boy a name?
Mm-hmm.
Edgar.
Decided. Now we're much more personally invested.
Yes.
Decided.
Two.
Follow.
Hey.
That's
what I had in mind, but I had to get my hand in the first
place. Scurry.
Chipmunk.
Up.
Good.
Up a tree.
One at a time, one at a time.
Mount.
making up.
Make up one. Mount Edgar.
Mount Edgar, okay.
Oh, right, his namesake.
Mount Holden, okay.
Mm-hmm.
After
watching,
the
this can be a good one, huh?
Direction. After watching the direction of the
sunset. Oh, you said the sunset.
Reluctantly.
Wow. We finally got rid of the chipmunk.
We're progression of time.
Uh-huh, right, right. And then?
Whoop, you had two, can you?
Oh, okay. And? It. Disappeared.
What disappeared?
Sunset sun?
Oh, okay.
Okay, now it's...
Now we're scary.
Darkness.
Ooh, good one. Clouds.
Stars.
Well, you got a real world.
Filled.
Stars.
Filled.
Night.
But he didn't
return
to
home.
Instead,
there you go.
He discovered.
Hey.
Wonderful.
Ooh. Hey. What? Discovery.
Don't be charmed. Discovery. Came. In the
bottom.
What was yours?
Discovered a cave in the bottom
of
the
valley. He,
Edgar.
Hey, that's right. Let's honor him with his name.
Edgar. Crawled.
Against.
Pardon?
Against.
Oh, wow.
Crawl against the walls of
the
cave
from
against the sides of the cave from one ledge.
Two. Another.
Meanwhile.
Oh, you said from one ledge to another ledge.
Okay.
Okay.
Meanwhile. His
parents.
I prefer all the emails.
Being. Oh, yeah. His parents being.
His parents being.
Hungry.
Oh, no. What time is it?
Well, it's not our position to judge.
Decided, nervously.
Two.
Eat.
Boy, these men, you know. They're priority now.
Worried.
Concerned.
Worried, concerned.
That.
Edgar.
Have not, haven't.
Returned.
They began.
Oh, I'm having blank here. I'm gonna bleep.
Two.
No.
Began to.
Began to search. The village.
Nowhere.
Could.
Right.
Find him. Edgar.
Okay, let's start wrapping it up.
frantically.
Edgar.
Oh, that Edgar.
Wandered down the
path.
Saw.
Frantically, you wandered down the path.
Saw.
Comma.
Saw.
The.
Light. Dimly.
Wavering.
The distance. He, Edgar.
Hurried.
Toward.
Greedy.
Right. I'm kind of. But.
Is it bad?
But.
Ooh. Ooh, this is a twist in the plot, right?
Is this not what you want to do? Do you want to really end it up quick?
No, that's fine. Let's see where it goes.
I know where I want to go.
But found.
Hey. I'm waiting for you. I'm waiting for you to say it.
Think of all the things you could have said.
But
salvation.
I didn't hear
what you said.
Yeah,
but did you say?
I don't
remember. But she keeps sticking with transitions. Conjunctions.
New.
Wow. This one. Meaning.
Yeah, right.
Crossed.
Pardon?
Crossed.
Found a new meaning, comma.
Crossed.
Found a new meaning.
Wait a minute.
Crossed himself.
You should have said himself.
Okay. Found a new meaning, comma, crossed himself.
Prayed.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Hey, now we're.
Ran. Prayed.
Yeah, works without faith. Yeah, I mean faith without works.
Prayed, ran, and fell.
Found is
into.
Ah,
good one.
Purgatory.
There you go.
You said I'd be happy every time.
Went to the river, that sounds a little bit.
Oh, parts of it, we're going there. It's innocent.
There's one in every group. If you're doing a cowboy story, the Martians will land.
That's right.
Okay, purgatory. Okay, this is getting, this is surrealistic.
Well, no, you gotta get him out of purgatory. You start with the preacher.
I want to get him out of purgatory.
It's a good metaphor for being lost.
Bleep.
Of course, it's a metaphor, yes, yes.
Help.
Pardon?
Help.
Me.
Sorry.
Shed.
Edgar.
Shed Edgar?
No, purgatory doesn't mean the same as death.
Edgar's.
Eyes.
Which one was it?
I don't know what.
It's never one.
Edgar's eyes. Rose.
Edgar's what?
His eyes rose. Upward.
Towards.
What?
Heaven.
Towards. Heaven.
Mama!
Abba Ema.
Do you say come?
No.
Meanwhile.
Okay, mama exclamation point.
Yeah. Meanwhile.
Chaplain.
One character.
Gosh.
Answer.
Dean.
Call.
Chaplain answer you.
Chaplain answered the call. Did he say mama?
Yes.
He was confused. Yeah, he was confused. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Female chaplain.
That's right.
Female chaplain, right. Okay.
Keep.
Mm-hmm. Nice one.
Faith.
You can hold your head around. That's good.
God will
help
you.
Amen.
let's sit down and let's talk about this a little bit. Why don't we kind of maybe try to cluster in a little smaller circle? So what was going on there was frustrating, right?
Yeah.
Because something would make you get an image or a mental picture, and you wanted it to go that way, and then the next person would, you know, go up.
The
next
person would. The purgatory.
But I've tried this exercise in other, the improv groups do this a lot in acting. But I think what's necessary for, I think you saw some of the ingredients that are necessary for a storytelling. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you need in order to, you can't just pass words around because you could just be going on indefinitely. What are some of those observations that you made from that game?
Something to focus. Something to focus on.
Yeah.
Some characters.
Right. Yeah. So that you can be personally invested in you know what you're saying. Usually it's characters, whether it's animals or mythical beings or, but something that kind of represents us, right?
You need some verbs.
Adjectives.
Interesting.
Right. And sometimes you can tell where you get to a grammatical part in the sentence where. You have several different roads you could take. Mm-hmm. You can make it a transition. You can continue it. You can put in an end, but or you know, and continue that thought. But it's a kind of frustrating exercise. But I think it's a kind of a good example of what's in a story. Robin Moore, in his book on storytelling, kind of defines these as in a really good way, I think. He says that there are basically four elements in a story that I think were exemplified in this, in an invitation. By that he means that an invitation is simple as saying, will you tell me a story, or may I tell you a story, or there's a storytelling session at 11:40 in the Creekside Room, you know, let's go. I mean, you're all here because you received that invitation and you accepted it, and you've invited me to relate that. The point is that I can't go barging into your inner world without your permission. And if I speak without your consent, I might not reach your inner world. So that's what the invitation is. That's what Once Upon a Time is. The next step is to begin the story that had a beginning. The beginning is a crucial transition from the outer to the inner world. And you and I... in your brain that allows you to shift your way of perceiving things, of perceiving the world. So then I could have animals singing, I could, you know, we could be on another planet, cabbages can be kings. I mean, anything is possible in this world. He also says that it's not the words but the manner of the storyteller that's vital. So when I was a child, in sawmill camps, there was a lady who would tell me stories of old Japan. On nice summer days like this, we would sit outside, and she would pull up a box and say, "Sit down, Tomo-chan." And then she would go like this. And I would sit, and I would listen. So that's a rather elaborate beginning, but that's one of the examples. So the most simple one is Once Upon a Time. Then the third element is the middle of the story, which is the meat of the story, which it reveals a problem and then works toward its resolution. You can have all kinds of twists and turns in the plot, and the story can be as long as you want to make it. But it's basically a problem and a resolution of a problem that's kind of driving toward one direction, which is the end of the story. And about that, I think Robin Moore has a really nice thing to say. He says, stories are about problems. If there were no problems, there would be no stories. And maybe I could have a couple of you read. There's one example that he gives here. And then, if you want, what's your name?
Beth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you could pass this other example on to Beth, I think we can see what he's talking about what is a story, what is in it that makes a story.
For example, long ago, there lived a king and a queen in a castle. All went well in that kingdom. Everyone was always treated everyone else with the greatest respect and courtesy. And there was never any reason for anyone to feel troubled about anything. The end.
Okay. Robin Moore says, okay, that's Hogan Village, right? Robin Moore says, that's not a story, that's a weather report. Okay? So let's see what a story is.
Okay. Here's a story. As in long ago, there lived a king and a queen in a castle. There was one problem. The queen couldn't have a child. She felt very bad about this because, as everyone knew, one of the duties of a queen is to give children to the kingdom. So she called the old witchy woman to her and said, "Can you help me?" "Ah, yes," the old woman said. "Here are my instructions. You must listen carefully and do exactly as I say, and you're off and running."
So we're off and running, and we've got the beginning of the story. And the off and running part is the middle of the story. So let's see. Now we're at Tomo, and she's on a nice summer day, and she is looking and listening. So now I will tell you stories, not of old Japan, but of my early childhood days in segregated sawmill camps of early Washington State. Because you see, my father was sawmill worker, and my mother picture bride from Japan. My father, he always told us kids, "You are United States citizens, so know your rights.
and push for your rights. And don't make let anybody make you think you are less than you are. And to us girls, you are good as men. So that's what I learned from my father and my mother. You be honest. If you be honest with people, you don't have trouble with nobody, black, yellow, or white. You just be honest with people. And that's what I learned from my mother. So now I'm thinking back on early days when I was in fourth grade at segregated sawmill camp in Onalaska, which is near Tacoma. And I used to like to go visit my Hakujin, my Caucasian girlfriend's house after school. One of them had player piano and I would love to push on the pedal and make music. My friend's mother would give us candy, but whenever she got to me, she would never pass the candy dish. She would pick out a piece and hand it. And it was different candy. I didn't like that. I went home and I told my mother, but she says, well, if you don't like the way they treat you, don't go there anymore. Oh, but I like the player piano. So I'm thinking and I'm thinking, and this is what I come up with. Whenever my friend's mother hands me candy, I say, no, thank you. You don't want the candy, Tomo? No, thank you, I say. Maybe she wants the candy like we have, mother, says my friend, but lady says, oh, we don't have any more. So, okay. So I think it was about a year that I kept going, and I never took the candy. But you know, we don't have candy at home, so sometimes I'm kind of grouchy with my sisters, and my mother says, if you're going to be in such bad mood, don't go visit your Hakujin friends anymore. But I kept on going, and I made it through without the candy. So now when I'm thinking on that, hey, maybe I wasn't so bad, huh? And say, isn't that a kind of civil rights? Oh boy, I started that thing real early in life. Yeah.
Very good.
So what is the fourth ingredient? What's the fourth element of the story? There's the invitation, the beginning, the middle. Okay, and you know, I went through and I did the end. And Robin Moore says that the end is, like the beginning, a very important transitional point, because it returns the listener to the outer world, and that if a listener feels is abandoned in midstream in a story without a conclusion, that they will feel cheated and unsatisfied. So that means that the storyteller has taken you on a journey and has returned you safely, leaving you, I hope, somewhat transformed or enlightened or delighted. So I think the next thing that I want to do working in, you know, with oral histories is, this is something that I call what's in a name, the name game. And I like to kind of go around and let's tell each other our names. All of our names, our given names, our family names, and their origins, if you like, our nicknames, the name that you always wish you had and that you feel is the real you. So I can start out. And my names are Shirley Sadile Nikki Nojima Lewis. And Shirley, Lewis is my married name. Nojima is my family name. It's a Japanese name. I was named after Shirley Temple, hence the Shirley. I was born in 1937, when Shirley Temple was the child star of the time, and my mother so very much bought the American dream that she named me after her favorite child star. She did a lot more than, I mean, she tried to make also a little Shirley Temple, and you just try doing Shirley Temple curls, you know, with curling irons on Asian hair. I had a Shirley Temple doll that was about yay high in a glass case when I was a child, and it's in my first birthday picture, so it's kind of a prominent you know, part of that early life. It kind of disappeared. After, I don't know what happened to it after we went to camp when I was four. So I would think that of my names, I mean, Nikki is the name that I'm most comfortable with, and I got that name because in fourth grade the kids used to, you know, how you give each other nicknames, and they used to call me Nikajima, and then that was eventually shortened to Nikki. So that's the name that I really think of myself as, but Shirley, that Shirley part has a lot of symbolism to me. The funny thing too is about that name is my mother couldn't pronounce it because my mother didn't speak English very well, you know, having been an immigrant. And so sometimes I remember in camp and later on in Chicago, I'd be outside playing with my friends and I would hear this shooty, shooty, and I wouldn't respond, you know, until maybe one of my friends would say, isn't that your ma calling? And then I, you know, go, and she'd be so angry because I call you and I call you and why you not come, you know? I call you shooty, you know? So, Elaine?
Well, my parents named me Doris Elaine. My father's name was, and my mother's maiden name was Nelson. And all four of my grandparents came from Sweden when they were young people. Okay? I now own my mother's, or my grandmother's chest that she came over from Sweden in 1892. It's almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
But for some reason or other, and I don't really know why, they changed my name. They started calling me Elaine. I mean, as long as I can remember, I was called Elaine. They must have decided they liked my second name better than my first name. And it's to this day, it's real confusing for me because I have a passport that says Elaine Doris Peterson on it, because I'm Mary Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And then my banking and Social Security and everything are in Elaine E. Peterson. And so I have to always stop and think what if I'm signing a check or what I'm signing, a visa or what, which name to use. So it's been quite confusing. Mm-hmm. And I asked my mother, why did you do this to me?
And what name do you feel that you are?
I'm Elaine.
You're Elaine.
Because I've always been Elaine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I'm called Dean Arnold Peterson. I almost changed my name to Dean Peter Arnold because I thought if I'm going to be a pastor in the States, there are as many Petersons as Johnsons almost. But instead I went to Africa with Arnold Peterson.
That's one way to do it.
And I'm called by my family Dean. I'm the youngest in a family of eight.
Mm-hmm.
The Africans call me Kitinda Mimba, the closing of the womb.
Oh,
right,
as the last child.
And
what do they call you?
Well, they called me out there, I'm Chingaji, Pastor Chingaji Dean. Mm-hmm. And Dean, they often put the consonant, the vowel mm-hmm. often is repeated after the final consonant. So it's often Dini. And Dini is a Swahili word for religion as well, so it's
wow.
kind of a mixed up thing.
Oh, is that right?
But Elaine's family always called me Pete, because I was Pete to her in college.
I never knew I had
my friends.
Name.
I never knew I had a name, Dean. And so to this day, all of her relatives and friends call me and write me Pete. Whereas my family don't know what Pete is, because they call me Dean all the time. And my friends in Africa, my European friends, my American uh-huh. friends, my American closest friends call me Pete, but other uh-huh. people. But now I'm getting used to Dean again, because there's only one man in the town of Bonner's Ferry that heard Elaine call me Pete. And when he comes out of church on Sunday by a priest or something, he shakes hands with me, winks, and calls me Pete.
What a crazy mixed up family. A Doris who's an Elaine, yeah. and a Dean who's a Pete.
Well, you can see where the Pete came from.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Mine was straightforward. Joyce Maxine Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
My maiden name was Hayes, and then I married, and it was Maxine. I've always been comfortable with Joyce, and I'm always called Joyce, except I'm called Grandma most of the time, or Lolo.
Or what?
Or Lolo. That's, or Lola. That's Philippine for Grandma.
Oh, really? And, so where does the Philippine part come in?
Well, we have a Philippine daughter-in-law and a grandchild, and we spent time with her.
I see.
But
Lola, like Grandma? But it's the word for
Lola.
Grandma.
Lola is Grandma. Oh, and Lolo is Grandma.
Lolo?
Lolo.
Yeah. His grandfather.
Father.
And Lola is grandmother.
That's interesting.
But Joyce, I was always comfortable with the name until I got in school and I found out there were men named Joyce, you know. But then they were famous ones, so that was fine. You know, Joyce Kilmer and James Joyce. So that was all right. I've always been comfortable. My mother said she just liked the name Maxine. She'd read in a novel about the time I was born, and she took that. And of course, Hayes was, came from my dad. And then Matson when I married Bill. And I was very thankful his grandfather took the name from his first name was Matt. But otherwise, I'd be Santa Paca, a big long roof. Yeah. So, that's my name.
Great.
Okay, my name is Bruce Stephen, and I'm Bruce largely because I'm a second born child. My parents' intent was to be alphabetical.
Oh,
but I have a brother who's named Larry because they decided they couldn't stand Craig. Cindy would have been okay.
Who's your oldest brother? Albert?
No, Alan.
And how many kids were they thinking of having?
Well, they were hoping to find that one of us would be a girl, but it didn't turn out that way. Life's like that. And let's see, I didn't use my middle name until I had to write things official. Now I usually use S, partly because I went away on a vacation when I was a grad student, came home, and got a phone call from the B of A credit card people. And they asked, "Are you Mr. Bruce S?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, don't use a credit card or you'll be arrested," which I thought was alarming. It turned out there is another Bruce country, in Seattle, as a matter of fact, who applied for a credit card at the same company I had. They said, "Oh, well, Mr. S moved from California to Seattle," and gave my card with my number to it. They got it and discovered, what's all this junk on this card that we didn't pay for? So they reported it was stolen. And then someone realized that the middle initials didn't match. Oh. So for official documents, I use an S. But
what's your credit card number?
I eventually canceled that credit card. So I've retired from using the credit card.
By the way, there's another Dean A. Peterson in the Lutheran Church Ministry, and his wife's name is Elaine.
Oh,
and they hooked up our pension fund. They royally mixed them up. It took them a half a year to get it straight.
Oh, no.
How do you spell Peterson?
S-E-N? S-O-N. Mm-hmm. So did he. Mm-hmm. But you know, all they had to do was look at their Social Security card, you know. But instead they... Mm-hmm. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think I'm Beth.
Okay, well, my full name is Beth, and there's not much to share about the Beth.
Is it Elizabeth?
No, it's not Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. I did have a second grade teacher who told me I was lying, and I need to go home and ask my mother to tell me the real story, which was terrible, I thought. But anyway, yeah, it's just Beth it. Rummel. And the K is a middle name that I added 2 years ago. I'm lesbian, and my partner and I had a ceremony 2 years ago. We've been together for 10 years, and the K is a name that we share together, and it's Hawaiian, and it stands for reverence and respect.
Mm-hmm.
K-E-I.
Mm-hmm. So you've both taken that on as a middle name.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so she keeps her surname. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's nice to know.
That's a nice name.
On my husband's side of the family, everybody middle name is K-A, but it's K-A-Y. We should change the spelling, I think. But you know, so my daughter is Kimberly K, my husband is Daniel K, my sister-in-law is Joan K. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, when I was born, my name was Barbara Ellen, and my mother named me Barbara after her best friend in high school and named me Ellen after her favorite sister who died in an automobile accident when she was 18 years old. And I, because of that, I always thought that I would, that I might die when I was 18. It was like this, you know, maybe there was a curse with the name. And my name was Sherman, which was my mother's maiden name, because my mother wasn't married when I was born. And about 6 months after I was born, my mother married my adopted father, whose name was Harold, and he adopted me, and they changed my birth certificate. In fact, if you were to go to the state of Montana, there's no record of me being Barbara Ellen Sherman. I'm Barbara Ellen Harold. When I was, I think, 11 or 12, I was confirmed, and I took the name Teresa. After, I don't even remember now, I think it's the little flower, Teresa,
yeah,
the
right,
little flower.
Right.
And I took it partly because I loved the name Teresa, but I also took it because then I was Barbara Ellen Teresa Harold, and that was Beth, because I thought Beth was kind of a nice name. So, anyway, I started the name.
Thank you.
My name is Brian. I like your BB combination. And that was the greatest disappointment for my mother, because she wanted a daughter. And when she was 12 years old, she knew her daughter would be Jan Renee. And when she would go by Renee, and her third child, which was me, on the way to the hospital, she goes, well, what if it is a boy? And she decided to name Brian because of my brother Bruce and my other brother Brent, and it kind of went together. And the names I answer to, I am different with different people, mean different things to different people in the village. They call me Posey Jr. sometimes, because the other plumber was Bill Posey, and he's from the South too, and we hang out together. So that just makes sense to people here. But of course, no one at home knows who Bill Posey is, and I don't call him that. But it doesn't really bother me, so I answer to lots of different names. It doesn't really bother me. But I don't answer to Jim Renee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have to
leave.
Yeah, but we have to. Oh, you do.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Do
you want to lunch?
Quickly.
Okay.
I'm Marjorie Lynn. My maiden name was Lynn because my father's parents came from Sweden and they took the name Lynn when they came from Sweden. And so that became their name in America. All of us, Johansson, I believe it was in Sweden. And I don't know where my mother got the name Marjorie, but I never have liked it. I always wanted to be called Margie when I was young. And my middle name is Lucille, and I didn't like Lucille. For a while, I thought Margie Lou was a pretty snappy way to be called. So,
Margie Lou from Ballard.
I went to Greenwood School in the Finney Greenwood district in Seattle. Then I went to Ballard High School in Seattle. But I went through this Margie Lou stage. Finally, I overcame that. I just wanted to be Margie. But people invariably call me Marge, which I do not like.
Mm-hmm.
Or Marjorie, I do not like. But Margie's fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, Margie also picked out her husband when she was about 16 years old, right?
Uh-huh.
Yep. How long have you been married now?
52
years.
Yeah.
Right.
Could I tell him about that?
Sure.
I was going a freshman in school, and I was taking algebra, and this young man whom I married was in the back of the schoolroom. I hadn't paid any attention to him, and this was algebra, and he came up to ask the teacher a question about some problem, and just as though I'm glancing at you, I just glanced over at him, and something inside of me said, that's the man you're going to marry. I was 16, I was not boy crazy, I was not thinking of a husband. I wasn't in the market for a boyfriend, even or a husband or anything. This thought came to me, inside of me, it says, that's the man you're going to marry. And I ended up marrying him. It took a little bit of maneuvering.
He didn't know what hit him.
I was 16, we didn't get married till we were 25.
Oh.
But then, this was depression.
There's
and,
some
and,
stories
and,
there.
Yeah, we didn't have enough money until we were 25 to get married.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very good.
But then that was 52 years ago we got married.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I don't want to make you all wait for lunch. Did the bell ring? Is the bell
ringing? It must have.
Okay, Holly, I'll get a little short one. My name is Holly. I only have two names. I felt a little bit pride. Both my sisters have Japanese middle names. I'm rather sorry about that. My middle name became Barry, though, not Holly Barry. My name is Holly because I was born near Christmas time. And I'm glad because otherwise my name would have been Violet, which I don't care for at all. Because my sisters both have flower names also. I'm the youngest of three girls. My father never got a boy. My sisters' name are Iris and Laurel. Very nice flowers, and I became Holly Berry, plant instead of a beautiful flower. Had I not been born near Christmas, I would have been a beautiful flower violet, but I didn't care for the name, so I'm glad I was born near Christmas. Our names are also my grandparents. Excuse my mother of choosing the most difficult names to pronounce in Japanese, because Iris, Laurel, and Holly all have L's and R's in them.
For Japanese people,
that's a very difficult
name. Holly,
Norwegians picking J's and they always come out
You know, when you said you were 16-year-old, and we have a friend who, Dorothy Yoder, a Mennonite from Pennsylvania, and she tells about she went her first day to college, and they were answering the roll call, and she said, Dorothy Yoder, and some guy back there said, John Smoker, and she said to her friend, I hope I never have a name like that, and a year later she married.
So Dorothy Yoder Smoker.
Well, yeah.
What was her first name?
Okay, well, you all got stories.
Thank you.
Well, but that's interesting too. Her first, it wasn't
her
Smoker.
Maiden
her maiden name was Waterhouse, Dorothy Waterhouse. How'd you like to change that for Smoker, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, Robin Moore.
Robin Moore. Uh-huh.